Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Peter Coyote, and you mentioned people act, we pick up the piece of dust, and that's connected to the whole world. Analogy. So you make a Zen temple, and that's a wonderful thing, and people come, and they get wisdom. They learn how to meditate. They get together. They provide a sangha, a community together. However, in the actual building of the temple, that means that you've destroyed a bunch of species, you know, that it's affected the worms that live under the temple. It affected all the insects or the animals that had to move out. You hear what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. But it goes beyond that.
Please help me.
That's certainly a cause. That's certainly a negative consequence. And it was one of the things that affected the Buddha as a child when he saw a field being plowed and saw the worms being cut in half. But it also means that within the Zen center, there's a total spectrum of possibilities, from selfless, charitable work to envy, to greed, to seeking promotion, seeking self-importance. You can't just get the part of the world you like. And Buketsu tells you, consequently, there's a way to behave. He said, you never run off enthusiastically. Like, just think how we got into the war in Iraq.
Yes.
People saying, it's going to be so simple. We're going to get the oil. That's going to pay for it. We're going to bring over all these young conservatives. We're going to set up a conservative democracy. It'll be a piece of cake. And what happened? We got there and we didn't protect the libraries or the schools or the museums or the treasures. And the people saw that we were just there for the oil. And all of a sudden, IED, improvised explosive devices, appeared and we were mired down. We were not treated as heroes. So the more appropriate way to look at it is kind of like a fox. A fox takes a couple steps, it sniffs the air. Is what I'm doing still appropriate? It takes a couple more steps. We have to constantly look at our plan and gauge it against reality and ask ourselves, have things changed? And if they've changed, we've got to make adjustments. But we can't expect purity. There's no pure place outside of the melange of the world to stand and be, you know, unencumbered by the negative half of the universe.
But we think of ourselves, okay, well, I'm one of the good guys, and, you know, that what I'm doing is really good. And there's this polarization. I'm thinking about how everything, like every news story, is formatted in one side versus another. And there's a wonderful quote that you bring up in your book that really relates to this. And this is by the late James Carse, who was a philosopher of history and religion. And in his book, Finite and Infinite Games, he says, there are at least two kinds of games. One can be called finite and the other infinite. The finite game is played for the purpose of winning. An infinite game for the purpose of continuing to play. That just really speaks to the time we're living in, that everything is couched in this horse race of, you know, who's winning and who's losing, and it's just dividing us. I have to mention this cartoon I just saw in the New Yorker magazine, which really speaks to it. Sometimes humor goes right to the heart of things. And it's two monarchs standing in front of a window in their castle. And there are two groups of people down below. And the The one monarch, he says, a revolutionary war was brewing, but I managed to turn it into a culture war. And I thought, yeah, that's kind of where we are right now, Peter.
Yes, so very true.
What is your advice? Give us some wisdom. How do we cope with this polarization and this horse race that's pervasive in our culture?
If you remember that the entire world is born of emptiness, is born of the primal energy of the universe, everything has an equal standing to be here. We may think we're the good guys, but that just means we're not owning the negative sides of ourselves. And we put those on other people that we call enemies. Remember, it was the good guys that bombed hotels in Baghdad in the middle of the night, killing men, women, and children. Suppose you asked them who the good guys were. It was the good guys who wiped out villages of peasants in Vietnam year after year after year. So it's very dangerous to think of yourself as the good guy because you stop monitoring your behavior. You've just made an assumption. I'm the good guy. So whatever you do is ipso facto good. What Buddhists understand is that they have their nature is the entire universe. I've got everyone in me from Hitler to Mother Teresa. And the reason I have to pay attention to what comes up is to make sure Hitler doesn't get past my lips or doesn't get into my muscles or doesn't activate me. I can't, as an aware person, I can't rest on the fact that I'm a good guy because I'm a human being. And a human being who's not paying attention is very, very dangerous. So meditation is the way in which we allow those negative sides to come up and we can look at them and we can evaluate them and we can face them without public recrimination. And in that way, little by little, like dropping, Aitken Roshi once said to me, he said, Peter, I see you as a bottle of ink that you're dropping drops of clear water in. He said, keep it up. One day the bottle will be clear.
Vivid.
Yeah. Suzuki Roshi used to say, our Zen practice is like walking in the fog. One day you'll be soaked. So
oh,
it's not
it.
Rapid, dramatic, sudden, but it fundamentally changes you.
Well, Peter, some people would think that meditation, the whole object of meditation, is to be enlightened.
Well, that's not true. Well, our fundamental nature is enlightened.
Oh, already that.
Our personalities are not enlightened because our egos think of themselves, A, as separate from the universe, B, as the most important thing in it, and they're riven by what the Buddha pointed out was greed, anger, and delusion. So until you get to the root of those things and can accept them, you're in trouble. So we have a practice. We call it RAIN. And RAIN's an acronym. So R stands for recognize. Something comes up. Wow, I'm angry. You recognize it. You don't run away from it. You don't make an excuse. You don't judge it. It's just, I'm angry. A stands for acceptance. You say, yep, I'm angry. Anger is right here. It's not I'm angry. It's that anger is here. That's what the Tibetans say. They don't say I am angry, which means that the totality of themselves is angry. They say anger is present. The third, the I, stands for investigate it. Really. So, okay, the guy cut me off in the car. I'm blaming the guy, but actually the guy was just a trigger. The emotions that arose are mine. So I ought to investigate them and forget about that guy. He was just.
I want you to pause right there because that particular part, investigation, is more than an intellectual investigation. It's actually an investigation, I think, in the way it's presented in the book and by Tia Strausser.
Strausser. Thea, yeah.
That she talks about actually feeling into the body, where it exists in the actual body, that you look in your gut or you look in your heart or you look in your, wherever it might be, your shoulders, you know, where are you holding it? And I thought that that was very instructive.
She's the woman who taught it to me.
Yes.
And if you accept it and if you stay with it, it will eventually leave you.
Yes.
If you don't suppress it, if you just have the patience like a cloud crossing the sun to stay in the shade for a while and don't deter your attention, it will leave and then it will be gone. And the N means don't attribute it. No attribution to a self. It's not a self that's experiencing that. It's a body-mind conglomerate with energy passing through it that's experiencing it. So you don't have to say, oh, I'm feeling so hateful toward this person. I'm a bad person. Forget the I. The I is extra.
Right. That's very instructive as to how to deal with anxiety or anger or whatever. That strong emotion just pops up and it gives us a moment to say, oh, let me go back and let me just go into, okay, recognizing it, you know, accepting it, not indulging in it, investigate it, let it just dissipate, kind of like...
That's exactly right.
It's just a dissipate. I don't know what dissipates, like waves just being absorbed by the shore, and they just dissipate, and then not indulging in that, or not identifying with it, like it's not I.
Yeah.
Anger is here. It's present. I'm in the presence of anger. I am not anger. Yeah, that's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. And it just takes me to that idea. I'm thinking of the Max Planck, who was a physicist. He looked at what is the nature of the universe? What is it all about? And he said, it's not a material thing, that consciousness is fundamental. You can't get beyond it. And I kind of think of that in the way that you're talking about emptiness and it's all present and we are all part of it in that ocean that we're all part of. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. I mean, I think of it similarly, a little bit different. I think of it as awareness is not personal. Animals are aware. Plants have awareness. Our eyes have their own awareness. Our ears have their own awareness. They may be mediated by the brain with its own awareness. But there's something about the universe which is pretty close to just the nature of knowing. Just, we have this feeling of knowing and illumination, that our thoughts are somehow illuminated from within. And the more work we do at accepting and clearing away what are called kleshas, which are dark, negative thoughts,
right,
that allows our basic light to come through.
Exactly. Thank you. I'm here with Peter Coyote. He's the author of Zen in the Vernacular, Things as It Is. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Thank you. I'm here with Peter Coyote. And Peter, I'd love for you to share with us how Zen Buddhism, how your practice of Buddhism can help us to work towards ways of living together that are sustainable and democratic and include racial justice. And I know that there are some people that say, oh, spiritual practice shouldn't include any of those things, but I know you have a different view of that.
Well, I do, and I feel that the people who say that are well-rounded and half an inch in diameter. I mean, the world is here. The world is what it is. And you can either label anger and frustration as unenlightened states and dismiss those people. But if you do, you're going to have to dismiss yourself because you're going to be angry sometime. You're going to be frustrated. And so what the Buddha said, you said it in your opening remarks, the Buddha did not recognize castes. He didn't recognize gender. He allowed women to practice. He allowed untouchables, Dalits, to practice. And that was putting his values into action. If you say the universe is one thing and undivided, what Buddha called dependent origination, I would not be here if it were not for oxygen, sunlight, water, growing plants, blah, blah, blah. So that's true of everyone. So that means on some level, everyone has equal standing. I may not like them with my personality, but with my big mind, I have to see that they have as much right to be here as I do. And I have to be able to question, well, what was it about their experiences that led them to think the way they do? So one of the things I'm particularly sensitive to is race.
Yes.
There was a period in my life from about 3 to 14 where I was quite literally raised by a Black family and a community. And just being a little kid before I knew anything about race or justice or, you know, segregation or anything, these people were kind to me. They taught me to play baseball. They taught me to sing and dance. I listened to their discussions about the white world, and I could see that they were getting a bad shake. And I could see that this was a white problem, not just a Black problem. So the Black people can't achieve justice and representation unless they get about 38% of white people with them, because they're a numerical minority. So what I have to ask is, what is it that Black people are asking for that white people find so easy to ignore? We are privileged. We never have to worry if it's okay to be in this store or that neighborhood or this restaurant. The national wealth of Black people, the wealth, inherited wealth, is like $8. I mean, that's a figure that just came out of Boston compared to what white people have.
Right.
Harder for Black people to own houses, harder for them to get fair mortgages. They live in neighborhoods where there's no healthy food, where there's dozens of liquor stores, dozens of drug sales, dozens of murders. And as white people, we are allowing our fellow citizens to be stripped of their constitutional protections.
And what you're saying is that this is systemic. It's not like just one person being rude to a Black person or
something. That's right.
And it's like, not like people say, oh, well, I'm not racist. But actually, if we're not participating actively in some way to this overall systemic problem that so many people in that we share this country with, then we're not really doing our good work, so to speak.
We're not living in the America we say we're living in.
Exactly.
Name me one white person that's been shot in the back while fleeing the police.
Or just out for a jog.
Any black person in the United States could name you 20 right off the top. Yeah. So where does that come from? Well, it comes from ignorance. It comes from history. It comes from an ideology that was developed so that people could keep other people enslaved. If you thought they were fully human, you couldn't keep them enslaved and treat them badly. But the clue that it was an ideology and not a real belief was that slave owners left their children to be raised by slaves. They had black women taking care of their children.
Right.
So if they really thought they were subhuman and somehow second-rate citizens, you wouldn't risk your children doing that. So the question is, do you want to live in a democracy that's just for you, where the privileges are yours and you get to take the cream off the milk? Or do you want to include other people? We promote ourselves to the world loud and clear that this is a place where anyone with hard work and playing by the rules can prosper. But it's not true. 40% of our children are hungry. So the same time people are complaining about their income tax, at the same time the Pentagon is getting weapons that are never put up for bid. There are no-bid contracts. The Pentagon has not been audited probably in 25 years. So there's always money to protect fear. There's always money to build another country club or a symphony hall or a concert venue for rich people to congregate and be self-congratulatory. But if there's money for that, why isn't there money to invest in black and Mexican and Asian neighborhoods?
Peter, what is an individual to do with this knowledge, knowing? So what is an individual to do?
Rain. The first thing is recognize it. Recognize it. Then you could pick one thing to do. You might volunteer to tutor black kindergarten kids or Mexican kids. You might volunteer to teach reading. You might volunteer to be a foster parent. I mean, there's any number of things you can do. And you can get and demand of your legislators that they take on the legislation that your Mexican and Latin and Black and Native American brothers and sisters are asking for. Instead of writing them off as whiners, you know, a few years ago they discovered $2 billion missing of funds that were owed to Native tribes held in trust by the government. That story rose and disappeared. And if you go to an Indian reservation today in Rosebud or in South Dakota, you'll see people living in cars on cinder blocks. There's no medicine. There's no health. There's women disappearing daily, never found. And so we don't have to deal with that because where I live, it's clean and bright and nice.
Right.
But if I won't support Black College Fund, Native American College Funds, if I won't include those people in my public concern, I'm just a phony. I'm just taking all the cream and saying what a great country we live in. And I'm forgetting the 40% of the people who are not winning.
There you go. And I'm thinking, too, that our meditation practice also will help us in constancy, in being constant. It's a foundation that will hold us to help us act in good and right ways. And we don't know the outcome, but if enough of us do it, it changes everything.
But that's what the Buddha taught. It's not my invention, you know. And they say, I once did a documentary film called Fishhead. And it was funded by an Eastern European jillionaire, some kind of way. And it was a study of It began as a study of sociopaths. And they pointed out that sociopaths are people without guilt or without remorse, and they live completely strategically. And they're always seeking advantage over other people. So then the narrator, who in that case was me, reads the script and says, oh, so that's the problem. There's a whole bunch of sociopaths in the culture. That's the problem. And then it goes on to say, but then there are a lot of people that are finding that there are advantages being a sociopath, that to live without guilt and remorse is actually quite comfortable. And they're taking mind-altering drugs and tranquilizers and Prozac and all of these things to be able to imitate those states of mind. Anyway, the final thing they point out is that in herds, when 5% of the population of a herd understands something, when 5% of the buffalo find the water, the whole herd finds it. Human beings are a herd animal. That means there are two questions. How many are we? And what are we doing?
Thank you so much, Peter. This has been marvelous being with you today. I've been speaking with Peter Coyote. He is the author of Zen in the Vernacular, Things as It Is. And to find out more about his work and his Dharma talks, his activism projects, his writings, go to petercoyote.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3816.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support, and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Mark Nepo, author of You Don't Have to Do It Alone, and next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about friendship as an island of safety.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
You are listening to CJSF.